We begin the current daf, Masechet Bamitzia, daf Samaches. We begin 4 lines down from the top of the Yamad, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf, discussing the halachas of Mashkin, and how they relate to the halachas of Ribbis. And Mashkin is when the borrower owes money to the lender, and he gives him his field as collateral, with different customs, sometimes eating the produce of the field, and sometimes deducting from that, then that how that qualifies regarding that the halachas of ribbis, where the lender lent the money and he's taking back not just the money, but additionally even the produce, which would seemingly be ribbis. Now, one of the characteristics of the customs was regarding if the borrower at any point in time could remove the lender from the field, and when he pays up, he could just take him away, or just like there's an allotted time for the borrower till when he has to pay up the loan, so too that applies for the lender, that he also has a certain time that he could hold on to it and the borrower wouldn't be able to remove him. Those are the different customs regarding Mokum de Masalki and when the borrower cannot remove him. So on that, the Gemara continues, Amr Rav Ashi says, Amr li sabi de Masa Machasya, the elders of Masa Machasya, the name of the town, told me, says Rav Ashi, that stam mashkanta shata, that in general, a collateral that's given from the borrower to the lender, his field to hold on to, is for a period of a year. So that explains l'may nafkamin, what halachic relevancy does it have to say that it's for a year? Is the achal shata, that if he already ate from it the produce of that field, the lender, for a year, then matzah misalkli, then the borrower could go ahead and remove him, v'iloi, but if he didn't eat from it for a year, then matzah misalkli, then for that entire year, the borrower cannot yet remove the lender from it, even if it's a place where what's called asur de misalki, even if it's a place where the borrower could remove the lender at any point in time, once he pays up the debt, it's not like he has it up until that point in time. Rather, as we said, that means to say it's not fully owned by the lender. But however, since a mashkin is for a period of at least a year, for that first year, explains Rav Ashi that the borrower is not allowed to remove the lender, and the lender could eat from the produce of that year. Another halacha that Rav Ashi says, that Amr li sabi de Masa Machasya, that the elders of Masa Machasya told me, my mashkanta, what is the etymology of this word mashkanta? What does the word mean, this that we use for the word of giving collateral? It's the shchuna gabe. It means to say that it resides, in the word of shachin, of living, of dwelling, by the lender, this field of the borrower, meaning there is no neighbor closer than the lender, as the Gemara explains, l'may nafkamin, for what halachic relevancy does that mean? It's ladina de bametzra, for the halachas of the neighbors, which halach is if a person wants to sell a field, that because of a sisa yashav atayv, the primary requirement that he has is he has to sell it to one of the neighboring neighbors, that piece of land, which is more convenient for them, they get first rights. That is what Rav Ashi is coming to say, that if the borrower is going to sell that land that he gave as a mashkin to the lender, there is no neighboring neighbor that's a closer relative to buy it than the lender itself, because he already has some rights to it as a lender who has it as collateral. That's what's called mashkanta. He is the closest shachin. He is the neighbor in regard to bar mitzvah, although he's not there, he doesn't live next door. He is considered that closest one because of the debt that's owed to him from the loan. Now, Amar Rabbi, he goes to qualify certain halachas that we mentioned, that less halachas of the halacha does not follow like the following different opinions, which relate to the halachas of ribbis, like tarsha papanoi, not like this tarsha, which we explained in the previous daf on daf samachay, different types of tarsha, but essentially tarsha is where somebody charges more for a delay of payment. Now, Rav Papa, as the Gemara will shortly explain, that's who Papa Noi is, he made date beer. And he would sell the beer, even in the market of Tishrei, which is a cheaper price then, he would charge the higher prices of Nisan because he would wait for the money for them to pay it only in Nisan time. So although he's selling it now cheaper, he would charge more, again, which seemingly is like a ribbis, where he's getting more money, more because of what's being charged, at what he's getting, he's only getting the money at a later point in time. So for that delay, which is the money that he's lending them, so to speak, he's charging more. So, but still, Rav Papa held that was permitted. So on that, the Rabbi says, halacha is not like that tarsha of Papa Noi. V'lei kishtori mechazanoi, it's not like the documents that they would use in mechuzah. V'lei kachachirei narshoi, not like the leases that they would have in narshoi. And the Gemara explains all these three. Kitarshi Papa Noi, which is Kitarshi de Rav Papa, refers to the tarsha that Rav Papa did, which again, as we explained, that Rav Papa held that it was not a problem about ribbis. Because he said, look, my beer doesn't spoil. I have wealth. I don't need their favors. I don't need their money. And therefore, they're not giving me any ribbis. I could hold on to the beer up until this, and I could sell it for the high price. They want it now. I'm doing them a favor. So therefore, don't consider like I'm taking ribbis by getting more than what I'm charging for it right now. And that is what Rav Papa held. Now, and that is what Rav is saying. The halacha is not like Rav Papa. Actually, as the Gemara asks on Rav Papa's opinion over there, which that he was told that, you're looking at it from your perspective. You're not gaining anything, but they are paying more because they don't have money. So essentially, there is an element of ribbis over here because if they had money, they would be able to buy by any seller over here now and they'd get a cheaper price. They're paying you a higher price because of a delay of payment, and therefore, the rabbi held that it is considered a problem of ribbis. Moreover, shtoy mechazenoi. The documents that they would use in the place of mechuzah, where what they would do is as follows. The zakfile l'ravcha akarna. What they would do is that they would add the projected gains onto the principal. So what they would do is, and this is what the common topic of iska is, which we're going to actually learn in the next Mishnah, where somebody would buy merchandise and he would give it to a worker to go ahead and, who he didn't have any capital, but he was giving the merchandise to this guy. So he would provide, he would finance the merchandise, and then the worker would go ahead and work for the two of them, and they would split the profits in half. Now, that profits, which was going to be in half, in mechuzah, what they would do is they would project how much would be the profits. Let's say it's the merchandise is $100, and they're projecting they're going to make profit $20. So $10 for each one. So in mechuzah, they would then write in the document, not only does he have to give him back his $100 that he gave him to start him off, but he has to actually give him back 110. It was written as if that's the principal monies. It was really just 100. Projected gain is 20, which would be a total of 120. He would get 110. He would get 10 because they're splitting the profits. He wouldn't write it like that. They would write it that he owes the principal of 110 to the one who would finance. And v'kasalei b'shtori, they would write this in the document that this guy owes this other guy, the financer, for this period of time, $110. And that is what the Gemara, what Rabbi says, that halacha is not like, you can't do that. Because miyemer dahava ravcha, who said that there is going to be a gain? We don't know for sure. And therefore, that's going to be a problem about ribbis, because if there's not going to be any gain, so what ends up happening is that there was a loan, as we're going to learn that the way iska works is half of it is a loan and half of it is a deposit. So the worker had a loan, and now when he's giving back the loan, he's giving back more than what he got. If there's a profit, so fine. So that profit is each one's money profited their own thing. The half that he got a loan, he gets his profits. The half that's the deposit, he gives back to the financer, the one that's the lender. And each one was making their own profit, so the more money that he got was based on his own money. But if there is no profit, there was projected profits. But if there's no profits and he's giving back $110, so then he's giving back more than what was loaned to him, and it's not based on profits because there was no profits, and that's a problem about ribbis. Now, Amalei Mar Bar Meimel Ravashi, he says that Abba Ovid Hachi, actually my father, a Meimer, he did this. He would write these Mechozenoi documents. Now, but the problem that was just pointed out in the Gemara, he wouldn't have. Because V'chi Asu L'Kamei, when the worker would come in front of him, the financer, a Meimer, my father would finance, and they would tell him, look, there was no profits, U'mehemelu. He would then believe them, and therefore there was no problem about ribbis. The whole reason why Rava didn't like this, there was a reason why they would do it like that in Mechuzah, because the financer didn't want that element of risk. In other words, he would say, I want to know what the projected profits, I want to be guaranteed that. Other people would like, no, if there's going to be more, I'll take more. If there's going to be less, I'm going to get less. In Mechuzah, they wanted to know confidently what's going to happen with their money. So again, we run into that problem, because if there is no profits, then he's really getting back more than what he gave, but his problem about ribbis. Now, but that's only if he gets back that extra $10, even when there's no profits. But he says, my father took care of the problem. He would write this type of document, and he would say, I want to be guaranteed, write it in the document, I'm getting 110, because projected is going to be 20, and you'll take 10, I'll take 10. But if there was no profits, he would believe them, and they wouldn't take the 10, so there's no problem about ribbis. Now, Amaleba, and that Ravashi said to Marba Amemer, Tenach hecha de'isei ledidei. What you're saying is very good, and if your father is still alive and he's still around at the time of the payment, that he's a pious person, he'll believe the worker, and he won't be taking ribbis. But said Rav Ashi, what if Ishachiv v'nofoshtar kamiyasmi? What if he passed away? And then the document falls in front of his children, the orphans, they won't believe the worker, and they'll say, no, look at the document that says that we have to get back $110 worth of principal, although the principal is only 100, but it was written as 110. As we said, that's what they would do in Mechuzah. They wouldn't believe the worker, and they'd say, no, we want $110. Now then, if there's no profits, then it's going to be a problem but ribbis. My, says Rav Ashi to Marba Memo, what are you going to do in that situation? Now, that the Gemara comments, Hava, that was like it says in the Pasuk Keheles, Kishkogosh Yaitzim Lifnei Hashalit, like an error that went out from in front of the ruler. In other words, it would be similar to a ruler that even if he says something erroneous, mistaken from his mouth, it can't retract it because the king, it's an edict, and that's it. And essentially, when a tzaddik says something like that, where what if your father passed away and then it falls in front of the orphans, then what's going to happen? You might run into the problem. But ribbis, v'nachnaf shida meimer. So by just saying that, and if your father passed away, that was like an error coming out of the mouth of a ruler, and his father and meimer passed away. So again, there was a second category that Rabbi said, the halach is not like that, you're not allowed to write this mechuzoi document. And the third one is chachire. Chachire is a lease, so somebody that accepts a field from his friend by promising him that he's going to give him 10 kor of produce for the year, whether the field makes a lot or a little, but he's guaranteeing the owner a certain amount of produce. So this type of leasing of Narshay, of this place of Narshah, the Chas V'Hachi, they would write as follows. Mishkein lei Polanya Ari Laplanya. They would do a type of leasing regards to a loan. That is, the borrower gives his field as collateral to that person, meaning to the lender. So meaning what people used to do is that they would lend money to poor people who had fields, and they would take the field of the pauper as collateral. Now, and then the borrower, the pauper, would then go ahead and lease it back from the lender and pay him a certain amount per year. So that is what they used to do, because as we explained in the previous daf, the lender is allowed to eat the produce of the collateral. So what they would do in Arshah is, but the lender didn't really want it. He would just lease it back to the borrower, and that's how he would take the produce by just getting those profits. Instead of working on it himself, he would give it back to the borrower, and the borrower would pay him for that, so he'd be getting money off his loan, but in a permitted way, because it was done through the eating the produce of the field of the mashkin, which he's allowed to. Now, but in that sense, Rabbi, the problem is, Amos Kana, when exactly does the lender acquire this field, the aknine lahale, that then he goes and acquires it back to the original owner, in the format of a lease? In other words, the problem that why they have with this, the chakiri of Narshoi, is it really turns out that the lender is eating ribis ketsutza, prearranged interest, because he's not putting in any effort into that field at all. And therefore, and even if the field doesn't produce, he's still going to be making money off it because he leased it out to the borrower, to the poor person himself. That is essentially if you're taking the field where, again, we said that's not going to be considered interest because it's like a sale, because it's a situation of suffix of doubt. You might make produce, you might not. So that's not a problem of ribis. But here, where you're getting automatic, actually to all appearances, it looks like you never took it and gave it back. The borrower, the poor person, still has his field, and because you, so to speak, leased it back, and he's giving more money than what was lent to him back to the lender. So therefore, that's problematic. Now, but says the Gemara, v'idna de kor kas v'hachi, but now, today's times, where they write as follows, kanina mine. The lender says that I, the lender, acquired this field from the borrower, meaning as collateral. V'shehina kama idone, and it stayed in my hand, the hand of the lender, and I worked it and I ate from it, what's called nachyos, as we explained the previous daf, that I deplete from the requirement of the debt every year a certain amount according to what I was eating from the fields. And then v'hodechacharad, and the document says, and only then did I go ahead and lease it back to the borrower. Says the Gemara, Kadesh Laitinal Delis, but if they love in Shabbat Dami, so that the door should not be closed in front of the borrowers, because if lenders cannot do an easy operation like this of just leasing it back, they're not going to want to lend money anymore, and we don't want the door to be blocked in front of the borrowers. So Shabbat Dami, so therefore that's a good operation. Now, This is different because since it first stays a little bit in the hand of the lender and he eats the produce from it for 3 years and only then he leases it back, so that's okay because what's the difference if he's working the field or if the borrower is working the field or if it's being through a lease? Either way, it's recognizable that it went to the lender and it was mashkin and then he did whatever he wanted to do with it. That's okay. The first approach was problematic because it was like, okay, when did he get it? When did he give it back? It looks like it never went away from the borrower and yet he's giving back more money to the lender. Here it's obvious. Like a mashkin, then he can lease it back after 3 years. On that, the Gemara concludes actually b'lav milsi, but it's actually not true. It's not the case. Even if the lender holds on to it, it is forbidden for him to lease it back to the borrower because that is considered full fledged ribis. Because as we said before, there's no element of doubt in the case of when he's eisav eichel, when he works and he eats from it himself, where sometimes he'll invest money and he won't take anything out of it. That's a risk that he's taking. That's considered a sale of that. That is okay. But regards to this case where he leases it out, where he's getting definite money, that's like prearranged ribis from the borrower, that would be problematic. And therefore, even in today's time, says the Gemara, this third category of chachir narshoi is forbidden to be done again because of the problems of ribis. Now the Gemara continues the next Mishnah, continuing on this topic that we mentioned before regarding iska. Iska, in the basic understanding, is when someone has money, he has capital, he has a product, but he's busy or he's doing other things or he doesn't want to work. So there's some other guy that's willing to work but doesn't have the money. So this guy finances him and this guy works and they split the profits. Now, regarding such a situation, the Gemara tells us later in the Kav Dalet Amud Beis that we view it as palga milva palga bekadin. We view it as half the money's is actually a loan to the worker, and half the monies is a deposit from the owner. And how do they split the profits? It's not a problem about ribis. It's that the money that was lent to the borrower to the worker is his own money, and that profit is going to him, and he'll just pay back the loan. And half of the other profits, which goes to the financer, that is from his own monies. Now, but there is one problem that our Mishnah addresses, so that takes care of the basic situation of how we define the iska. There's another problem is because ultimately the worker is doing work additionally on the financer's money too. That work will be ribis because he's giving him a service more than giving him back the money that was lent to him because he's working not just for his own money which was lent to him, he's also working on the owner's money. And that's how the owner's making that profits, but he's doing the work. That work is a problem about ribis. That's what our Gemara, that's what our Mishnah addresses. So it says the Mishnah, Eim Hashiv and Chen B'ni. A homeowner, a financer, cannot tell to a store owner that, look, these pears that I have could be sold in the marketplace for saw for a seller. Now, you have a store. You could sell it little by little, and you'll actually profit a saw from the amount that I'm giving you. So here, take these pears, sit here in the store, and you sit here and you sell my product. So that says the Mishnah, he's not allowed to do that operation with a storekeeper, lemachtzis schar, to go ahead and split the profits 50-50. Now, the reason for this is because, as we mentioned before, the Gemara tells us later on of Kav Dalet Amud Beis, that this iska is viewed as half of it as a loan and half of it as a deposit. Again, the explanation for this is because generally, somebody that accepts merchandise to split the profits, he's accepting upon himself responsibility for half of the principal regarding whatever happens to it, if something, an oinus happens to it or goes down the price. Now, therefore, that half that he accepts responsibility for anything that's going to happen to it is considered to him as a loan, meaning he's got to give back that 50% of the principal no matter what happens, like a loan. Whatever happens, you got to give back the money to the lender. Now, the reason for this is because it was evaluated by him, the money, at the time of the market. Now, the halacha is that each one's going to be taking half the profits. So it comes out that so regarding the profits, okay, each one's taking his own profits. But what comes out is that the work that the worker's doing in the half, the 50% share of the owner, which is the pekadin by him, which is just being deposited by him, it's not a loan, and for that he doesn't take responsibility. For his own money, for the own 50%, which is viewed as a mill, but that he takes responsibility. The other 50%, he's working, doing that work, that is essentially like profit that the lender, the financer, gets for the money that he lent to the borrower. Now, therefore, that's problematic. So to another case. V'leitin ma'ois likach behen peiris l'machzischar. Similar type of a case where someone cannot give money to a worker to buy product for 50% of the profit. Elim kain. So the Mishnah says that's the same problem because he's going to be giving him money, which half is going to be milvah and half is going to be pekadin. And the work he's going to be doing for the pekadin part is going to be considered ribis for the lender, for the financer. But the Mishnah says, how are you allowed to do it? Elim kain nisin leischaroi, unless if the lender gives the worker the pay for his effort in half, kepaya like a worker. Meaning he has to pay him like how much you would have to pay a guy to work and do the work you need to do with your 50%. I mean, his 50% he's getting, he's keeping, he can do the work. But the problem is doing the 50% of the owner, that he has to pay him like a worker. So then it's not ribbis because he's paying him for that service, and if it's not a free service that he's getting, to be considered like ribbis. So to continue the Mishnah, Eimei Shivan Tarna Goylin. A person cannot settle hens, meaning to evaluate eggs in the value for the owner of a hen, to have him sit his hen on top of his eggs so that they can hatch into chicks. He cannot do this lamechza to split the profits in half, meaning whatever the value of that, the chicks will be more than the value of the eggs. Because he's giving his eggs right now, as they're worth right now, they would be worth, let's say, $10. And then when they develop into chicks, they're going to be worth $100. So then they want to split that difference. That you can't do. Now, the reason for this is the same thing as we said before. Because since the owner of the hen accepts responsibility for half of the values of the eggs, if they get ruined or if they die, so that half, again, we said like an iska is half is going to be viewed as a milva, half is going to be viewed as a bakadin. So the owner of the hen is taking those eggs, like the financer is like the owner of the eggs, and the hen is like the worker. So half it is going to be like a loan. And the reason being is because now it's being evaluated in the money as it's worth right now. That half is viewed as a milva. So it comes out that the work that he's doing for the other half of the principal, which is viewed as a deposit from the owner of the eggs, he's gonna have that work. That's gonna be like a profit for the fact that he's getting the gift of the money from the owner of the eggs, and therefore that's problematic. And so too, ve'in shaman agolin v'siyachin. You cannot evaluate the calves or colts, meaning as they're worth right now, to accept responsibility to bring them up for a period of 2 years to do lamachza so that they can split the profits in half. And so too, to split the loss in half if the animal dies, for the same reason, the same problems that you run into, because now they're evaluated at a certain price, half is going to be viewed as a milva, half as a bekadin, and then they'll split the profits, but the work that he's doing is going to be work for the owner. Again, elim kein nisli schar amalai umezayne, unless if he pays him for the work that he's doing. And moreover, that for the food that he has to give for the chicks or for the calves, if he covers that, so then he's not getting any free services. Therefore, he's not getting any ribbis on his money. That's the way he would be permitted to do the iska. And now, but says the Mishnah, Av makablin agalin b'siyach lamechza. But the worker could receive the calves or the colts for half the profits, meaning when they're small, without a shuma, without an evaluation, meaning what that means to say is that if the animal or the chick dies, then he's not going to pay anything. But if it does live, and then it gets worth more in profit when he holds on to it for the period of 2 years, then they're going to split the profit between the two of them. That's not considered as a milva. Because a milva is, we have responsibility as a loan to pay it back. Here he's not taking any responsibility. It's like a rental, meaning he'll do the work, we'll split the profits. So since there's no loan over here, because if it was a loan, then the borrower would have responsibility to that. So there's no loan. So he can give him a free service, because it's not a free service. It's just a contractual agreement in their working arrangement. And since there's no shum over there, there's no requirement of accepting of an einus or a zula on half of it, at least, on the part of the worker, therefore there's no loan, therefore there's no problem in that situation. Now, parenthetically, the Mishnah says, umagalin aysan, so this operation about working to take care of the animals for a period of 2 years, and then they'll sell it when they're worth more, because it grew those 2 years. So the halacha is megadon oisin achayu mishaloshin. So the halacha is that the worker has to work to have them grow up until they're a third of their growth, meaning a third of an ox or a third of a horse, and then they split it. And v'chamar, regarding the taking of a donkey, you have to have it grow. That's what he's accepting the worker as his job. Ashtay to'enis, until it could carry a load. That was their custom, be how much they would make it grow up before they would split the profits. Now, the Gemara explains, Tanu v'lein b'raisim, we said the primary halacha in that Mishnah was that this iska, which on its basic framework is permitted because it's not that the one who's giving the money is getting back more on his lent money. That's the way it would seem to be on superficial. And that we say that no, because he's not getting back profits from a loan that he gave. He gave $100, he's getting back $110. How's he getting back that extra money? It's not that the $10 is from the loan. It's that we view when he gives $100 to the worker, $50 of it is deposit, $50 of it is a loan. The $50 of the loan, now when this $100 of principal is now $120 and they split 10 and 10, it's just that the worker is getting the $10 from his $50, which was a loan, he's giving back only $50. And the other $10 he's getting from his own money, which was his own, which the worker didn't take responsibility for, which was deposit. So that in itself is okay. But then we said in the Mishnah, the problem is, but what's with the work? It takes work to have to sell something and do all the work. That work that the worker is doing for the 50% that is still the principal of the financer, that work is going to be considered ribbis. And that we said, so fine, you have to pay him like a worker. And then you paid him already, so it's not a free service. You're not getting back anything more than what you gave for the loan. On that time, when the Braisa explained, kepoyel batel, what type of a worker? Like an idle worker, which that sounds like, how much would a person be willing to take? And just to take the day off, meaning people go to work for a reason. You have to work hard, but then you get paid a decent paycheck. Now, how much would a person be willing to say, no, I'll take workers' comp, I'll take unemployment, because it's worth it for me to not work and make that amount. So that amount is how much you pay this guy who's doing work for you, where he's not doing the regular job that he does. So that, how much would you pay a guy just to sit idle? Now that thing must make a pile, but what does that mean, like an idle worker? Because the question is, this guy's not sitting idly. He's working pretty hard, coming and going and calling people and selling things in the store, and he has to take money and sell things and to weigh and to do all these different things. So what does it mean? How could you pay him like an idle worker? And that's the payment. How does that fit into the understanding of what he's doing and providing for the owner, for his half, that to pay him like an idle worker? So I think Marketiz Amad Beis and Amad Baye explains, meaning, Kepoil Batel Shal Oysam Locha De Batel Mine. You pay him like an idle worker from the work which he's idling from. In other words, if he originally was a carpenter or a smith, so how much would he be willing to take to not work in his hard job and to take an easier job like this of just sitting by a store and being a cashier? That's much easier than that other job. How much would he be willing to take? Meaning, a cashier gets paid a certain amount. Now, he doesn't want that type of job, and that's why he has his high-powered job. But how much would he be willing to take to do an easier job, but obviously being getting paid more, but less than in his high-powered job? That's how much you have to pay this worker for the work that he's doing for you. That is what we mean when we say pay him like a pile of bottle, shall eisa malacha that he used to do. And then you're not getting a free service from him, and then there's not a problem of ribis, and then the iske is permitted. Now, based on this, the Gemara now qualifies with tzricha. Why do we need two different cases in the beginning of the Mishnah to explain this halacha of that it'll be permitted to do iska, that when you pay him for the service that he's doing for your 50%? So the itanachem ben hadri only said the case of when the guy has produce and he says, look, I could sell this in the marketplace right now, but you go ahead, you'll sell in the store little by little, you can make more of a profit margin that way, then we'll split the profits. Had we said only that case, I would have said that the storekeeper, that's where it's enough to pay him like an idle worker. That's enough. You don't have to give him anything more than that. Because it's not such an effort, it's not such hard work for him to do that type of a work. But regarding the second case the Mishnah talks about, when he just gives the money, says, here, I'm going to wire you the funds, you go ahead, you buy the stuff, and you do all the operations. That's a lot of work. I would have thought to say that actually it's not enough to pay him like an idle worker. You would have to pay him like a full-fledged worker because he's doing really tough work. So it's not enough just to give him like a poil bottle, and therefore it would be considered ribbis in that situation. That's where I have to say that even in that case, it's enough to pay him like a poil bottle. And so to the other way around, Vitana Mois Likr Ben Paris, had we only said the second case about when you hire a worker by just giving him money and you tell him to buy the product, and then you pay him like a payal batal. Havamina, I would have thought to say hasam hu debay kapayal batal. That's where you need to pay him at least like an idle worker, which we said is a lot more than how much a person usually gets. It's just less than how much his former high powered job was. So I would say that's when you have to pay him like a payal batal. Mishum de nafesh tircha, because he puts in a lot of effort. But just being a storekeeper where he doesn't have a lot of effort, he just sits there and scans the item, doesn't have to put in that much effort. I would think to say that actually then it's enough for the service that he's providing just to go ahead and give him just a little bit more, just so it's not, quote, ribbis. But he's anyways doing this job, and to do a little bit more as a storekeeper for me is not a big deal. That I would think that even if he only lets the worker dip his food into my vinegar dip, or only if he eats with him a dried fig, that's considered pay. Nash for my Coke or take a little bit of my Danish, that would be considered enough of a payment for your service. That's what we needed to say, that no, even in the case of the storekeeper, it's not enough. To get away from the problem about ribbis, you have to actually pay him full-fledged in the sense of you got to give him at least what a poil bottle would be getting. That's why I have to say both these cases. Now the Gemara brings kama ize v'tarna goylin ma'alan. How many goats and chickens are brought to the table? That's a mnemonic to recall the four brises the Gemara is going to quote that relate to these halachas that we're discussing over here regarding this problem that one runs into by iska, that you have to pay the worker for the service that he's providing. So Tarban Ulna Braisa. Kamu Uskari. This question that we're discussing is discussing the Braisa. How much does the worker have to get paid for his doing work, not only for his half, but even for the half of the financer? So that says the first opinion, Be Merubo Ubeimu Dibrimir. It says whether a lot, whether a little, doesn't make a difference. Whatever you pay him, you gotta pay him something. He says, even if he only lets him dip with him into his vinegar dip, or even if he eats with him just one dried fig, that's considered his pay. Now, as Rashi points out, Rabbi Huda is lenient more than Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir requires at least that you have to at least set up a certain amount that you're going to pay him beforehand. Now, but whatever you want to pay him is okay, whether a lot or a little. But whatever it is, that's enough for the payment. But Rabbi Huda doesn't even require that you have to even set up a payment plan beforehand. Even if, let's say, after he did the work, he's sitting afterwards in the cafeteria and he just dips his food into his dip, like that would already be enough considered for the payment. That's what the difference is between Rabbi Huda, who's more lenient than Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Shimon Yechaya, he says, you have to pay him a full-fledged pay. Meaning, like Rash says, like a pile bottle, like we said before in the explanation of the halach of a mishnah, like an idle worker, not enough just to let him dip into your food or give him whatever token you want to. It's got to be like a pile bottle, like a guy who's not doing the job he would normally do, and he'd do an easier job so that he'll get still a nice pay, but not as much, but at least it's an easier job. Tanabon, learn another brice, the second brice. Ain't shaman, we cannot evaluate, in other words, to go into this operation about an iska, which is that it's evaluated, we want to estimate how much is the money worth right now so that we could qualify half it as a milva and half it as a pekadon, where this worker is going to work for the guy who's providing the money. So says the Braisa, you can't do that loya se'izim, v'loya se'rochim, can do it with goats or with sheep, v'loy kol davar she'eino isav eichel, or neither anything that doesn't eat and then that doesn't work and eat, which is what goats do and sheep do. They don't work. All they do is you have to feed them and provide for them. You can't do that lamachza to split the profits in half, which is what we call an iska. Now, but as Rashi points out, but if the animal does work and eat, for example, like a cow, like an ox that would plow, or like a donkey that carries a load, then the work that they would do for the worker is the pay for the work that he's putting into and the food that he's providing for them. That itself he'd be able to take as to pay for his service, and therefore that wouldn't be a problem of ribbis of the financier. Now, Rabbi Yisrael Rabbi Huda Omer, he disagrees. He says, no, shaman es ha'izim, you could qualify and evaluate the goats, meaning for this iska operation. Now, the reason for that is because the worker could get paid for his work through the animal itself, just like you would get with an ox, mipnei shechelvois, because you could milk the goat. And the esrachelim, and you could also do this iska with the sheep, because you could shear the wool. So you could get pay through the animal itself for the work that you're doing for the 50% that's from the owners. So too, not only could you shear the wool, you also have the shait face you have when the water would wash over the animal, it would wash away some of the wool, and then the worker could take it. Umartes, or sometimes when it's going through the thorns, the wool gets stuck in the thorns, he could take that. And so to Vesatana Gailis, you could also do this iska with a hen, it also works and eats. You don't only just have to feed it, you also get, it provides certain things, you could take that from the hen. So these animals, says Rabbi Yehuda disagrees with Tanakam and says that you could go ahead and use them for an iska because the worker will get paid. Now the Gemara has, Tanakama and the first Tana, what? How do we understand Tanakama? The shearing of the wool of the sheep and the milk of the goat is not enough for the payment for the work and for the food that the worker is providing for the 50% of the owner. Why shouldn't that be enough for what he's doing to be considered that he's getting paid? So that thing my answer is you're right. Begizav achalav kulam leplegi, regarding actual shearings of the wool or milk that you get from the goat, that no one disagrees that if the owner of the animal is okay, that they won't split and that the worker could take for himself, then that would be considered his pay. Ki plegi, but when were they arguing was not straight up milk, was benisuvi, which is the watery part that gets separated from the milk, what's called the whey, or regarding the shearings of the wool, wasn't the straight up shearings, it was a visaisre. It was the parts that get washed away or they get stuck in the thorns of the sheep, where taisre is the Aramaic of neishrin, of that which gets pulled out, meaning through getting washed away and getting stuck in the thorns, that's where they disagree. Tanakama Savallah Kribshim ben Yechai. He held like Kribshim ben Yechai, the Amarnes Neishchar Misham, like we mentioned before, he says it has to be a full pay. Now, these things, the way, and these are not full fledged pays. They're something, but they're not significant enough to be considered a full fledged pay. Which Rabbi Yehuda, Savalu Kavu, he held like his father, Rabbi Yehuda, as we mentioned before, the Amar that he says, that even if the worker just dips in his food into the vinegar dip of the financier, or if he only eats one of his dried figs, that's his pay. So therefore, even something very small, that would be enough for the wool that gets stuck in the thorns, that gets washed away by the water, or regarding the whey, that would also be considered, that's the principle explaining their machlokes regarding the whey and the taisrei of the shearings that just get stuck in the thorns, if that's considered enough of a pay for the worker. Tanabolin in the third brisa. Maskeres isha lechaver to tanagoylis. A woman could rent to her friend a hen b'shnei efreichin for a pay of two chicks per year. Now, when we say that she'll rent it to her, essentially what's really going on is that a woman that has a hen is permitted to say to a woman that owns eggs in the terminology of a rental. So what she'll tell her is, give me your eggs and I'll place them under my hen and I'll put in the effort to transform these eggs into chicks. And then for the payment of my work, I'll take two chicks for my pay. Now, that's okay because it's being said in the terminology of schiris. So there's no problem. But isha sha'amal chaverta, but if a woman tells to her friend, Tarnagoyle shali, the hen is mine. Ubeitzim shalechi, and the eggs are yours. Vani va'at nachlik ba'africhin, and me and you will split the profits in the chicks. Meaning, I'll provide the hen, you provide the eggs, and we'll go ahead and I'll do the work, and we'll split it. Now, since she's using the terminology of splitting, so that's the machlekes. Rabbi Yehuda Mate says it's permitted, but Rabbi Shimon Isa, he says it's forbidden. And the reason why Rabbi Shimon holds forbidden because anytime you use the terminology of we'll split the profits, that is essentially an iska, which is something that it's just as equally to get a loss as it is to get a profit. Now, since the owner of the hen is taking responsibility for half of the eggs, as we said, anytime you do an iska, half of it is like a loan, half of it is like a pekudin, so it comes that half of it is like a loan. Now, but again, and so if it's half of it is a loan, so then you run into the problem. The work that she's doing is going to be considered ribis on that loan because she's working for the owner of the eggs 50%. But again, when you do it the first way in the terminology of a schiris, so then there is no responsibility that she's taking for the eggs from the owner of the hen is not taking any responsibility. It's just a rental. I'll rent you my hen. And then whatever happens, happens. So since she's not taking responsibility, then there's no any part of it as a loan, then there's no problem about the owner of the eggs getting more of a profit margin than what she's investing, because that's what a rental is. You can get a profit off of that.
Now, the Gemara asks, Rabbi Huda le boi ischar amoli mazani? How do we understand Rabbi Huda? Why does he permit it? Seemingly, it is an iska. And if it's an iska, in the case of when they said it not in the terminology of a rental, but rather as a splitting, which is 50-50, which is an iska, so doesn't he need that the worker should get paid for their work and for the food that they're giving for the hen to provide to turn it into chicks? So the Gemara answers, Ika beitzim muzaris. He holds the reason why it's permitted is because regarding those eggs that do not fertilize into a chick, where then the owner of the hen will take that as her pay for the work that she's doing. And as Rashi points out, those unfertilized eggs are permitted to be eaten, as the Gemara Chulindav Samach Dalmabe says, that those who are not so delicate can eat an unfertilized egg, and it's actually permitted. Now, but Rabbi Huda is going according to his opinion that he holds, as we mentioned before, that even something as insignificant as an unfertilized egg, which most people wouldn't even want to eat, is enough, because he said even just dipping into the tzir of the owner is enough of a pay. Now, but Reb Shimon, who disagrees, is because he holds that, no, you have to be neutral schar mishlam, you have to give a full-fledged pay. And unfertilized eggs, which most people don't eat, is not going to be considered enough of a payment, and therefore he held that it's going to be asur. Now, the fourth brice that we mentioned from this simon, that we said of Malin, Tarna Bon Lindam Brisa, Makim shenagu lahalis schar kasef lemois lebehema. In the place where the custom is that besides for the operation that we explained of paying the worker for the work that they're doing, additionally, they would be mala, means they would add on the payment of kasef, literally means to say the shoulder, but it means to say the carrying, the porter fee, which is to carry, they would give that in cash, in money, for the work of doing for the animal. So if let's say you do a regular iska, where you evaluate the value of the calves or the colts when they're small, and he gives it over to his friend to do the work to split the profits in half when it gets older. So additionally, they would give the money for how much the pay would be for the one who actually does the schlepping, doing all the carrying besides all the work. Additionally, it takes effort for small animals. You got to carry them around. So then they would give that to the workers. So it says the price is some malin. So you have to provide that additional pay to this one who's doing the work of the iska. And you cannot deviate from the custom of the country, because if you do and you don't give that to the one who's doing the iska, essentially that's a gain that the lender, the financier, is getting, which would be a problem. But ribbis. Just like the actual work that the worker does is a problem, so to hear this extra fee, which is usually tapped on, if you don't pay that and you're saving that money, that's going to be ribbis, that's problematic. Now, Reb Shimon Gamliel, he says, however, that shaman egel im imai. You could, however, do an evaluation of this iska, of a calf with the mother, or v'syach im imai, this colt with its mother. What essentially Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying is that there is no extra effort, meaning he says it's not a problem if you don't give the porter's fee for the calf or the colt. If you're doing it that the iska is not only for the young animals, but it's also with its mothers, because then there is no effort to bring the animals in and out, because the young animal will draw itself and go by itself after its mother without putting any effort or extra food into that, just like its mother works and eats. And you don't have to provide for a porter's fee because the animal is big. So to the younger animal will go by itself, and therefore such Rishim Gamliel, a Philip Makam Shinogula Halas Schar Kasab Lamois, even in a place where the custom is to go ahead and provide a separate fee if you're working, let's say, just with calves or colts, when you're evaluating them by themselves, there was an extra porter's fee that was tapped on usually for the worker. If you're doing the iska together with the mother, then you don't have to pay for that. It's not going to be a problem about ribbis, because you don't have to put an extra effort, because the animal goes by itself with its mother. Now, that the Gemara asks, but doesn't he require that the worker, this one who's doing the work of the iska, who he should really have to get schar kasef, the porter's fee, like the Tanakama? And if you're not giving him, so didn't we say that you have to pay for the work and for the effort and for the food that the worker is putting into it? Now, as Teza points out, although we just explained, Rishon Gamliel holds that you don't have to because the animal goes by itself, but Teza points out that because even with its mother, many times you do have to put in the effort of transporting it and therefore paying for a porter's fee, and therefore in those situations where he's going to be doing that and he's not going to get compensated by the financier, that's going to be ribbis from the lender. What would Rabbi Shimon Gamliel do in those cases? That answers the Gemara. Ikka Golem. There's still the excrement, is the dung of the animal, which that the worker is allowed to take. That's going to be considered his pay for doing the portasvi. Now, that the Gemara says, but the idach, but the Tanakama held that no, Golem afkuri mafkulu. The excrement, the owner declares it ownless. He doesn't care for it. He allows the one who's doing the work to take it, but that's through the medium of hefker. That's not considered as a pay, and therefore, since that's not a pay, therefore, you can't go ahead and get away with that. You would have to actually pay the porter's fee, and that's why if you don't, it's a problem about ribbis. Now, Amar of Nachman, he says, halacha k'Rebbi Yehuda. So he sums it up. He says, halacha is a k'Rebbi Yehuda, who we mentioned before, that says, even if just a worker just dips his food into the owner's vinegar dip, it's considered pay for the work that he's doing. And Malacha Krebisa Behuda, Malacha Krebisa Behuda, who says that even if with goats and sheep, even if he just takes the whey or just those wool that gets pulled out as he's walking through the thorns or through the water, that would also be considered enough pay for the worker. For, again, that it shouldn't be ribbis for the work that he's doing for the owner's 50%. And Valacha Kribashimul, that we just quoted before, that says that if the animal that you, the young animal you took on Iska, is with the mother, then you don't have to give the porter's fee again because the animal goes by itself, and even if it doesn't, then you have the glolim, you have the dung of the animal as the pay. Now the Gemara brings a story related to this halacha about Iska, that Bnei Rav Elish, the sons of Rav Elish, Nafika Laya Hushtara, it was produced against them after their father had passed away, a document that showed that their father had accepted upon himself an Iska job, which was that there's going to be half the profits and half of the loss are going to be split between him and the financier. Where Dava Kasebe, the way it was written was, Palgaba Agar, Palgaba Hefset, half of the gain and half for the loss, that they're sharing equally. Now, Amar Rava, Rava says, Rav Elish Gavarabahu, Rav Elish was a great person, he was a righteous person, Talmud Chacham. The Isur L'Inshi L'Avasafi, he would never have fed someone something that's forbidden to him. In other words, he would not have fed ribis, interest, to the owner, to the financier. Because if he accepted upon himself the way it was written, that's a problem about ribis. Because, as we explained before, he's working on this iska, which 50% of it is a loan, and 50% is a deposit. So the work that he's doing on the financier's part is that work is going to be ribis because of the half that he's getting as a loan. So Rava said that can't be, that's what this, as the document sounds literally like it is, it can't be, because that would be an iser, and Rav Elish would never have done that to make the lender take ribbis from him. So rather, says Rava, what you have to interpret the terminology, what the document said, is actually that he accepted upon himself either one of those two options. Although it says half the profits, half the loss, it wasn't one thing, which was that, oh yeah, if there's a loss, we'll split the loss, or if it's a gain, we'll split the gain. No, those are two different options. And what he was told was as follows. Manavshach, the financier said to Rav Elish, either way, I give you the option, whichever one you want. E palga, and that is if the giver, the lender, the financier will accept upon himself, ba'agar, that regarding that you'll take half the profits. So that's where the lender is going to accept upon himself the responsibility of the loss more than half. For example, trade tilsi behefsid, he'll take upon himself, look, if you're going to get only half the profits, then says the financier, I'll take upon myself the responsibility, the loss of two-thirds of the loss. Where now there's no problem about ribis, because now comes out, if he's taking responsibility of two-thirds of the loss, which means say that two-thirds of it was a pekatan, that means only one-third of it was a loan to Rav Elish. So Rav Elish, that means to say that he didn't accept responsibility on only a third of it that he took responsibility, yet he's taking profits, half the profits. So it comes out that what he takes in the profits, more than a third, because half is more than a third, that is the pay for the work that he put in for the owner's half, which he was working for two-thirds as of a pekatan. So for the work that he did, because really, essentially, he should only get the profits proportionate to the part that is his portion, which is the milva part. As I explained before, that's how Iska usually works. It's 50-50, and he gets from his 50 whatever proportionally half the profits are, and he gets from that. But here it's not like that. Here he's only a third of it is the acceptance of the loss, which that means to say, because that's the milva part, so that means he only has a third of the share, yet he's getting half the profits. That extra is the pay that he's getting for the work that he's doing for the owner's part. So that's, he's getting paid for that, therefore there's no problem about ribbis. So when it said palg ba'agar, that was one option. You'll get half the pay, even though you're only taking a third of the loss. And then we continue on top of samach tesem and alv. The other option was, or e palg ba'hefsud, or you could take half of the loss. In other words, when it said palg ba'hefsud in the document, it was giving another option. If Rav Elish wants, he can take, again, half the loss, and trade till Sibagar, but then he'll take, if he's accepting more of the loss then he'll take two-thirds of the profit. And then that will, what, although he's accepting only half of the loss, that's going to be the payment for the work that he's doing, more than what he has that for the loss, is that he's getting two-thirds of the profits. So therefore, since he's getting more than what he has, that extra, again, is going to be the schar of the worker in the iskan, and that's why there's no problem about ribbis. Now, but on that, Omer Rav Kahana asked, he said, Amrit l'shmaita kameder Rav Zvid Menardo. I said over this teaching in front of Rav Zvid Menardo, and he said to me, how do we know that that's the way you have to interpret the document? Maybe it was as it's written. Maybe it was palga ba'agar, palga ba'hefsid, which is 50-50. Now, the question then that was asked, but then that's a problem about ribbis, because the work that he was doing is ribbis for the owner. That said, Rav Zvid Venarda, Dilm Rav Elish Tayvela my Betzir Hava. Maybe Rav Elish had dipped, he was the worker, maybe he dipped his food into the vinegar of the owner. And Va'am Rav Nachman, Halacha Rav Yehuda, as we just said before, and that's why we bring in this story over here, Rav Nachman said halacha like three different different opinions, and said halacha is like Rav Yehuda, who said that all you have to do is dip in, and that's payment for the work. So maybe it was a regular isk, a 50-50, and it's not ribbis, because he got, because although it's not recorded in the document, he just dipped in his food, which is enough. Rav Yehuda holds, you don't have to make it up beforehand. So Amalei, so he said to him, Lav Hilchasidim, it's not true. It didn't say that the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. What Rav Nachman just said was that Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yasi his son, and Rabbi Shimon are all following the same opinion, which is that they take the lenient interpretation. You don't have to give a schar mishalom. You have to pay him like a pail bottle. You could just give him something minimal, something insignificant. That's what we're saying, but wasn't saying that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore, don't tell me to interpret and resolve what Rav Elish had done was that he dipped, because that you can't have a document of palga ba'agar, palga ba'hefsid, because we don't pass on like Rav Yehuda. It was just, Rav Nachman was just saying that's Rav Yehuda's opinion is like those two other opinions. And then we have to say, the way we said it, that actually it was two different options. So the Gemara says, the Hachanam Mistabra. Actually, it's logical to say that Rav Nachman did not say the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. Because the Ilok Teim Halacha, because if you don't say this, then why did Rav Nachman have to go through and say halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, halacha is like his son Rabbi Yisti, halacha is like Rabbi Shimon? Let him just say from those three opinions halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, then make him a kulu, where he's the most lenient of all those three opinions. He always said you don't even need to have the wool that gets stuck, you don't need to have any of these things. He said, let him just dip his food in, he's the most lenient, and then you could have just said that, I would have known the other ones are included in that. Therefore, rather, says the Gemara, obviously it's because Rav Nachman not saying halacha is like Rav Yehuda, they're just saying like that they're all the same opinions, and therefore it's not a valid option to say that Rav Elish halacha l'maisa was going like Rav Yehuda, and therefore it must be, again, as we explained, that it was two different options, but again, he was getting more than the loss that he was accepting upon himself. And rather, like Taisa says, halacha is like Rav Shimon, that he says, nisnei schar mishal, and halacha is you got to pay a full-fledged payment, like we said, of a poil bottle, like the halacha of a mishnah, but if you don't, then that's a problem in the iska of ribbis, because the work that the worker is doing, not just for his own half, but also for the owner's half, is going to be a problem about the owner getting interest more than what he's investing in the loan he's getting back for the work that the worker is doing for him on his half.